Potter. Mr. Stiegel.
Thank you, Judge Posner. This is a Rehabilitation Act case which incorporates the Title VII and ADA, Americans with Disability Acts, essentially the Americans with Disability Act provisions substantively to government agencies and government contractors. The Title VII comes in because we have an issue of whether the charge provided sufficient notice of the claims asserted in the lawsuit. So while the administrative process is conducted within the Postal Service's Equal Employment Office, the EEO office, the law is the same as applies to the EEO, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, processing of a charge.
You know, you didn't argue here that there was anything improper in the requirement of the arbitrator that Ms. Teal submit to the examination. And given that she failed to do so despite numerous accommodations and some continuances, how do you argue that the termination was related to her disability?
Well, she was depressed, and she had an inability to concentrate, communicate, and interact with people. That's why she was on suspension and why he conditioned her return to employment on an independent medical exam.
But at the time, as I recall, at the time the final deadline was set, she had communicated to the Postal Service that she was able to take the examination, so that her disability didn't impact her ability to comply with that requirement.
No,
so
actually,
how can the refusal to once again extend the deadline have any relation to the disability at all? I mean, at that time, it seems to me that, you know, she was acknowledging that she was no longer impaired in her ability to comply with the requirement of an examination.
Actually, what was actually sent was a May report from her physician, Dr. Powers, that said she could return to work if she could be assigned to another location. Then the labor relations specialist, Mr. Greaser, goes through this communication about the report. He wanted a release from Dr. Powers for the examination. Her submission from her doctor said she can go back. The Postal Service then needed the independent medical evaluation under the arbitration order, and that was the second step. The communications in May said nothing about the independent examination, which was why she had to go back to her doctor again to get another report. And that's the whole point of what reasonableness and reasonable accommodation is. She was terminated by a two-day discrepancy. The report was in fact issued by the physician on July 28th date. But I mean, this person, first of all, has depression, still diagnosed, and dealing with physicians from anyone is difficult. They're practicing medicine, especially primary care.
What's the employer supposed to do?
What?
What's the employer supposed to do with someone like this?
Call the physician and ask for the report. Easy enough. It's done all the time. They fax it to you.
But, see, the problem is that the Postal Service reschedules the examination, arranges transportation to accommodate her concerns, and then when they're informed that her mental state would, you know, not allow her to participate fully, suspends the examination indefinitely until she herself informed them that she's now able to undertake the examination.
Your Honor, they acted entirely properly, reasonably, in January and February. They suspended the examination. But reasonable is a question, a fact. And the case I cite here, Judge Harlington Wood's opinion, I believe it was, in Boltmar, dealt with a paranoid schizophrenic janitor. And they said that you have to take into account the disability and the interactive process. And again, basically what the mentally disabled janitor needed was a different location within the school district, and there was a summary judgment, and this court reversed, saying, well, you got to take this into account. Ultimately, yes.
So what does she need?
What?
What does she need to be able to work?
She needed there had been an encounter with another worker. She needed another location.
That seems to be the big thing. This other worker is a supervisor?
I think so.
If she was not under that person's supervision, it looked like she was.
I think that's her problem. I think that's true. The other thing is,
does that make you a person that's a qualified person under the ADA if you can't work with a certain person, but you can
No, that's not her disability. Her disability is depression. That is one of the
disabled. If there's just one person you can't work with,
same way as the paranoid schizophrenic. Nobody would doubt that a paranoid is disabled, but the accommodation was work with someone else.
I know why you say that. I know why you say that.
You think a paranoid? I'm sorry. The example in
a lot of people are paranoid.
Well, diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic.
Suspicious.
Well,
but this person, depressed people work, obviously. So it's depressing listening to the case, right? So,
well, it's depressing representing this person.
The only thing her depression seems to do is make it difficult for her to work with this one person. So why is that a disability?
Well, because the evidence of the doctor was that that's part of interaction of people. Maybe there are other manifestations. You're jumping ahead to the record here. That was the recommended accommodation. You're merging that with disability.
So if I'm depressed working with Judge Posner and I want an accommodation, I would be entitled to be on panels but not with Judge Posner.
That is not the issue in that situation. Is at least it's got it's maybe there's an alternative. Get your counseling.
Why is that silly example any different, really, from what you're talking about here?
Well,
the problem is with this supervisor.
No, the Postal Service is a little different operation than three judges. There are a lot more people involved, and it was a particular location. There was a fellow employee involved as well.
But see, you know, there's a Scylla and Charybdis problem here, so. If she can't, if there's just one supervisor, one person she can't work with, she's not disabled. If she can't work with anyone, then she's not qualified.
Well,
intermediate?
If you're looking at the accommodation for the disability, then you did.
Well, what if she can't work with a lot of people, so she keeps getting shuttled around? That can't be
what
required.
What I have to keep stressing is every analysis says that the disability determination is independent of the accommodation. We're not claiming a major life activity limitation on working. When you're entirely correct,
well,
that would come in.
If you work with people, then...
Well, do we get an independent determination? And the trial judge properly found, Judge Gorman found she was disabled, qualified. Then we go to what the combination was.
The only evidence is that she doesn't get along with one person.
Well, I think there's obviously the interaction confirms the doctor's diagnosis.
Well, that's ridiculous, because that means the way you prove you're disabled is you refuse to play ball with the employer's reasonable demands.
Well,
right?
Your Honor,
you don't show up for your exam and so on. You say, well, of course I'm disabled.
With all due respect, Your Honor, then let's write mental disability right out of the ADA, because you say inability to deal with people is the prime problem with mental disability, and Congress included that. Paranoid schizophrenic, which you said.
Not true. It's not typical of depressed people that they don't get along with
That's
people.
What the record says.
No, that's not true.
Well, that's what she said.
Depressed people, you know, they have trouble sleeping, eating, they may be suicidal. That doesn't mean they don't get along with people.
I mean, I'm entitled to have the doctor's opinion, which interaction with people, and it's liberally construed. I rest on that.
You think a typical symptom of depression is inability to get along with people?
I don't know whether it's typical or not. I know in this patient, which is a case by case, the doctor said it was, and that's consistent with the old opinion on depression.
How this would make mental disability an extremely attractive Well,
yeah, if you assume people...
disabilities suit.
If you assume that mentally disabled people want to act the way they do, yes. If we want to classify them that way, of course they have difficulty interacting with people.
Of course, they're disabled. Mental disability is that it's diagnosed purely on the basis of behavior, right? So if you act crazy, you'll get a doctor to say you're crazy.
Well,
right?
The problem is, how can you evaluate, Your Honor? It's a catch-22, if I could answer,
that's
please.
The problem.
Well, the problem is that if you want to get to the medicine of it, there is physiological changes in the brain that causes that. And we're dealing with the part of the...
Oh, you mean she's had a brain scan to determine that she's depressed?
Your Honor, the state of psychiatry...
Answer my question.
No, and the state of... And it wouldn't show anything anyway. The state of psychiatry is such that you cannot measure the serotonin inhibitor problems with a brain scan. So if we want to rule out all of the state of psychiatry, and with respect, sir, you're scoffing, that is the state of knowledge.
I am scoffing. It's true.
Well, that's the state of psychiatric knowledge.
And, of course, it lends itself to a lot of phony claims.
That's not for this court to decide or a judge to decide.
One can use one's common sense. Common sense is, if you have conditions which cannot be diagnosed other than by behavior, you create an opportunity for a person, by altering his behavior, to make a claim. Right? That's just the common sense of it.
Your
that
Honor,
doesn't mean they should all be ruled out.
Well, I got to object to even this common sense statement, and can I tell you why?
No. Your time has expired.
All right, then.
Mr. Brost?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jerry Brost. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Central District of Illinois in Peoria, and I represented the Postal Service in the district court. To establish a prima facie case under the Rehabilitation Act, the plaintiff has to establish first that she's disabled, that she was performing the essential functions of her job with or without accommodations, and that she suffered an adverse employment action because of her disability. I think that the plaintiff here has failed on all three of those elements. First of all, whether she was disabled or not, she did have a doctor that stated that she had a depression. Plaintiff claimed below that this depression substantially limited her in her major life activities. And that's what the depression is not the be-all and end-all. The depression is just the impairment. The question goes beyond this question of does she have an impairment, but is she substantially limited in major life activities? They argued below that the major life activities that she was precluded from doing or were significantly impaired was thinking, concentrating, communicating, and interacting. I don't think the record supports that, and I would...
Was there any exploration in the earlier EEOC proceedings of Ms. Teal's claim in her initial complaint that her supervisors published information regarding her mental health condition?
I don't know the answer to that. That was, as you stated, that was an earlier EEO claim that didn't get to the district court. She did see the doctor. The doctor stated that at times, if you read the doctor's deposition, she says at times depression may affect people's interactions. It may affect their ability to think. It may affect their ability to concentrate. And all that's true, but she never links it up with this particular plaintiff, with Joanne Teal. She did send a note in. By the way, she saw her, Dr. Powers saw the plaintiff for the first time in December of 2002 for depression. She was a family physician. The next time she sees her is January 16th of 2003, and she sends a note to the Postal Service to excuse her from the fitness for duty evaluation, which the arbitrator ordered her to to have back in October 22nd of 2002. And the note to excuse her stated that she is suffering some depressive symptoms which do not allow her to focus or concentrate or produce well at this time. So it indicates that there's some, it's not, she doesn't say this is a major impact on her life, but she says there's some depressive symptoms, and it's just temporal. It's at this time. This court has held that intermittent or isolated bouts of depression do not qualify as disabilities, and the impairment must be permanent or long-term. And there's nothing to indicate that this depression was permanent or long-term. In fact, by May of 2003, just 4 months after her initial, after that letter, she states that the plaintiff was able to go back to work, was able to perform all her duties at the Postal Service, but would have trouble, and she would prefer, if she didn't, go back to her original postal station because of the problems that she was having with her supervisor, Patricia Dittmer. Now, this court held in Wheeler versus Household Finance that the court has held that there's the inability to work for a particular supervisor because of anxiety or stress or depression, which is exactly what we have here, does not substantially limit a major life activity. So there's no evidence as of May that she is impaired to the extent that she cannot think, concentrate, communicate, or interact with other persons. Now, I would ask that the court affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment for the Postal Service, and I would ask if the court has any questions of me at this point.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brost, and thank you to Mr. Stegall.